so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game? Yeah!
Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah. All right, you ready to do another one of these, man?
I certainly am, yes. Yes, I am. It's weird. I do feel like I'm getting a double dose of you today because I was just listening to your appearance on the Celebration Rock podcast talking about the Pearl Jam album No Code.
That's right. I am on this week's Celebration Rock podcast. What did you think of my No Code discussion?
I liked it. I'm not a big No Code guy, so like I'm kind of coming at it from a lesser knowledge standpoint, you know? Like I barely know the songs on No Code. I really barely know any of the songs after Vitalogy, to be totally honest. So it's interesting to hear the breakdown of the album in general. And I think you guys do a really good job of that and sort of how Pearl Jam's career might have developed if they had done things differently around this time.
Yeah, I was surprised at both how well No Code and Yield have aged.
Hold up. Okay. Well, I mean, I, you know, after listening to the podcast, I was thinking I might Spotify it anyway, but I still have maybe 15 minutes of you to listen to. So.
Yeah, it's worth it. Worth a minute. And our Yield episode drops today. I'm not in that one though.
Well, that's less exciting then,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose. All right, we got a lot of stuff to run through. We're gonna tackle Amazon's pilot season.
Yeah.
There's some stuff happening in the world of sports, the NCAA tournament and U.S. soccer that we'll jump into. And I guess we should start with homework, right?
Yeah. Which we did some of.
Some of, yes. what should we tackle first?
Let's maybe go with the crazy ex-girlfriend thing because I liked it. I immediately understood what you meant about the sort of musicality of the show not being the cheesy tripe that you are particularly frustrated with in the average musical.
It's winking at you the whole time anytime it jumps into song, you know what I mean?
Right. The songs are winky songs, and it's not just like part of the action, but people are singing instead of talking. It's like dream sequency. You know what it kind of reminded me of, and I wanted to ask if this was a show you watched, is it kind of reminded me from a tonal perspective of the dream sequences in Ally McBeal?
Yeah, I could see that.
That it's just this woman's overactive imagination, like, being expressed in film.
Yeah.
And now, Ally McBeal was going crazy, which is different. But the, like, thematic feel of the action of the songs is sort of similar to me.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. She's going a little crazy.
Right, totally. I would say more she is a little crazy than she's going a little crazy.
Fair. That's fair.
But Rebecca Bloom is really, really good.
She is. And, she's winning. You know what I mean? Like, that's part of what makes that work. You know, they reminded me a little bit of the dream sequences, some of the dream sequences in Legion. You know what I mean? When like they had that like French dance number. You know what I mean? Like, there's a whole like, isn't this crazy vibe about it that's happening? You know what I mean?
Definitely.
That's a little bit more tolerable to me than say the traffic scene of La La Land.
Oh, well, that scene is you know, pretty high level intolerable. So,
upon that, we can agree. I Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is winning. There's maybe a little bit more musical than I would would have, you know, drawn
ideally.
Up. Yeah. but yeah, I like it. I, you know, I don't know that it's the, I don't know that it's appointment television.
No, but it's a lot of fun. It's a thing on Netflix that I think I can wholly recommend as like, what do we want to throw on the TV tonight? Like, oh, this will be fun.
Yeah. Hey, I have a plane flight and I want to download a few episodes of Netflix.
Yeah, perfect. Totally.
Yeah. Perfect for that sort of thing. So, yeah, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I didn't watch Jane the Virgin. You did
thanks for nothing.
That. Yeah. But I will try to get to a few of those in the near future. How are you doing with The Americans, speaking of catching up on stuff?
Not great, because I've had all this other stuff to do.
Okay. Well, The Americans is better than those things, I think.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you're right. I'm getting close to the end of season one. I'll report when I finish season one, I think.
Okay. That's good. Yeah. We got to get you kind of hooked into the suspense.
I think realistically, like, getting caught up by the end of this season is probably, like, the best goal.
Because I have, like, 17 characters I want to, like, ask you.
Yeah, sure. So. I get it.
Have you met Nina yet?
Nina. Is that the Russian at the embassy?
The hottie Russian? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I met her. Okay. She's deep. Right. She's deep in it. I also, I did get to see in one of the last episodes or two that I watched, Kerry Russell beat Margot Martindale's face to a pulp.
Yeah.
Which was thrilling.
She does some beating. Apparently, Kerry does most of her own stunts on that show.
I was actually wondering about that. It appeared that both of them are doing a lot of their own stunts as much as, you know, they have stunts, but certainly some fighting stunts that I think, as far as I can tell, those are the leads.
And what's really remarkable about that is currently she is pregnant and doing those stunts. So,
interesting.
Pregnant in real life, not on the show.
Gotcha. Yeah.
The Americans I would recommend, but we'll get to that a little bit further down the road. Let's talk about Amazon pilot season. For those of you who are not familiar, this is a thing that Amazon does. As a media person, I'm going to guess it's 90-95% per show for show. And not necessarily a real competition, but it's certainly presented that way, where they get a bunch of their new pilots that they're thinking about ordering to series, and they put up the episodes, and people can vote and decide which ones they want to see on the air. I think when they have something, you know, they know, and they're going to put it out. But like Transparent, which I would say is probably the flagship Amazon original show, started in that manner.
Right.
And I'm guessing a few of their other shows. And so,
well, and it may be that, you know, there are shows that they're going to put out regardless, but if another one gets particularly good reception, maybe they'd add that to the slate or something. I don't know.
Correct.
But I'm with you. Like, if they think a show is a go picture, as it were, a lukewarm vote is not going to change their mind.
Indeed. Do you watch a lot of Amazon originals in general?
No, I don't. But I like the idea of this, if only because I like the idea. I haven't even voted in the survey yet. I mean, I might, but that's not my priority. I just think it's interesting to like see the germs of the ideas and think about, you know, are they good ideas, and then see what people like about them.
Yeah,
like true. I'm fascinated by the survey portion, kind of as a pop culture scientist, if you will.
Gotcha. By the way, I would definitely recommend Catastrophe.
We talked about that. I watched the first season of Catastrophe, I believe.
Yeah, and there's a second now, and it's
actually the third just started, I believe.
Oh, really?
But it is. It's because it's technically it's a British show, right?
Yeah, so it's the seasons are very short. I think six episodes.
No, but I mean, I think the third season started in England. And I think maybe it comes to Amazon when it's done airing in England or something like that.
I don't know. All right. So of these pilots, I mean, if we're talking about ideas, I think there were some decent ideas in the group of shows that we saw. Now, I've seen now I'm going to screw up all the names, but Mrs. Maisel.
Uh-huh. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, I believe, is the name of that one.
Maisel. Budding Prospects.
Uh-huh.
And Oasis. Those are the
How would you rank those three if you had to?
I would say exactly in that order. One to three.
So you liked Oasis the least and Maisel the most?
Yeah. All right. So, you know, I had some issues with the Maisel pilot.
Really? Okay.
But that was definitely the one of the three where it ended and I wanted to see what the next episode was going to be like. You know what I mean?
Yeah, by far the most, I would say, of all of them. And also just that there's no doubt in my mind they're making that show, and equally little doubt that it will be awesomely entertaining. You know, whether it follows through on some of the promise it has, you know, from a thematic standpoint, time can tell. But, like, I'm with you. It ended, and I was like, I want to see what happens next. There's so much here that's interesting to me. Plus, so funny, so engaging, and she was wonderful.
Yeah, the lead performance, you know, the woman playing Mrs. Maisel, is just dynamite. And there's no way the show works if it isn't.
Right. It's all about her, and she's fantastic. Not only just from the perspective of, you know, she's set up to be a super engaging and attractive person, and she is that just from a present standpoint, but she makes the, like, when does it take place? The 50s, would you say?
I'm going to guess 60s. It's a little
hard. Yeah, maybe late 50s, maybe early 60s.
When was the Beat Poet thing happening? Because that's what clearly dates this thing. I believe that was early 60s, right?
And Lenny Bruce dates the thing as well. I think it's late 50s, early 60s. I don't know exactly, but I do know that she nails the sort of fast talking broad thing, if you will. And she does it in a way that is not obnoxious or overdone. I'm in love with her. She was excellent. And I'm looking forward to watching the rest of that series, which I, again, have no doubt is going to be made.
Beat Generation is a mid-50s thing per Wikipedia.
Okay. So yeah, that's what I thought. Anyway, I think I liked it even more than you did, is what I'm essentially saying.
Yeah,
about that.
I mean, look, when I say I had some problems, some of those things are particular to me. You know what I mean? Like,
there are no superheroes.
There are no superheroes, but one of the things that I have a tough time with are period pieces.
Yeah,
I don't like to watch things that take place during a time that I didn't have any rights.
Yeah,
and that was a thing that I was kind of just very conscious of. Like, it was really hard for me to get out of that watching this world.
Yeah.
Knowing that I would have had no agency in it, you know, like it bums me out a little bit. It bums me out, you know, and obviously this is a part of the setup, you know what I mean? But the way that women are treated in this show just kind of bummed me out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean by sort of its promise from a thematic standpoint. Yeah. Is like, obviously this is a feminist story. And how that's portrayed is going to be sort of a proving ground between whether this is like a show that's fun and funny and occasionally mildly problematic,
right,
or a show that's does have fun and funny moments, but is great and important, which I think it has the potential to be.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that the show shouldn't depict things the way that it's depicting it. Quite the opposite.
That's what it was.
It's just hard for me to watch.
I hear you.
But that said, a lot of other parts of it were easy. You know, the Amy Sherman Palladino style dialogue.
Yeah. Well, it's bang bang, and it fits better here than in like every time. Now look, I watched all the Gilmore Girls, so guilty as charged. But like, even as I enjoyed moments of Gilmore Girls, the dialogue between mother and daughter smacks absurd quite often.
Yeah, agreed.
It works here. A similar bing bang boom in a comedy club in New York in the 50s feels at home.
Right. And look, Aaron Sorkin dialogue is also rat-a-tat and ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah.
And can still be compulsively watchable. So, I think there. It was a quick hour. I'll say that.
Yes. Yeah. Flies by. Really enjoyable. Wanted to watch the next episode. So I think it's a total win, frankly. I actually, now first of all, I'll say I did watch all five, and you, I think you chose correct, although I am very interested to hear your take on Master Legend. So I'm going to give less away about that.
Okay.
I don't know how I feel about it.
Master Legend just sounds like a Netflix Marvel reject show. Just the title. I'm just going on the title.
Right. It's really not. You know nothing about it?
I know nothing about it.
Okay. I'm not going to tell you anything except that, and I think it says this before you see anything on the show, it is based on a true story.
Okay.
Anyway, it's interesting and bizarre, but I didn't love it. I am not a huge cartoon guy, so...
It's a cartoon, the show?
No, okay. The other one is. Master Legend stars John Hawks, who you know is the guy who looks like a more mature version of DJ Qualls.
Yeah.
From Eastbound and whatnot.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. The surrogate.
That's Master Legend. The other show, which is called, I think it's called The New VIPs, is a comedy cartoon that I think, you know, made me laugh, and in as much as comedy cartoons are a thing, I think probably has potential. They're just not really my thing. Like, I don't watch BoJack or even really The Simpsons,
God,
or
BoJack's
I never really
so
got
good,
into South
man.
Park.
It's so good.
I know. It's just me. So that's why I say that one is hard for me to judge, but it does seem, it's, again, I felt like I feel most times I watch South Park or The Simpsons or something. It's like, oh, that was funny. I probably won't watch it again anytime soon, but it was funny. So that being said, I think I liked Oasis as much as, if not a little more than Budding Prospects. For both of them, it's like, if they made that, I'd probably give it another couple episodes at least. And I think they're both interesting premises. And by the way, if we're going to talk Oasis, I really like Rob Stark. I think he's a good actor. I think he's like engaging and interesting to look at. And I'm kind of down to watch.
I didn't even realize that was Rob Stark.
Really? Oh yeah.
Like
yeah.
Literally until just now. Oh yeah, Rob Stark. Yeah.
Maybe I think that's that probably speaks good things, unless you thought he was awful.
No, he was fine. I found Oasis to be pretty just boilerplate science fiction to me.
Well, maybe a little bit, but doesn't the mystery interest you to some degree?
No.
Like, okay, fair enough.
I'm like, oh, okay, this is like Lost. Oh, okay. You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
All right. Well, I mean, I guess with those shows, it does sort of depend on how they flesh out the like central mystery of the place. You know?
That's
right. It has a Lost-ish element. It's like foreign strangers in a strange land.
People see
something
things.
Mysterious is happening. People are dying.
Yeah. They need a man of God.
Yeah, but not like a obnoxious preacher man or super Jesus-y man of God, you know?
Yeah, no, he was just sort of the least obnoxious man of God. I'll say that.
Yeah.
I just so don't... Like, I don't know. Like, this is one of the... Like, for me, that show, my ability... That's a show that I would want someone who had seen it and...
Who'd seen, like, two seasons of it.
Yeah, or critic, even, like, 5-6 episodes, who'd gone down the road and had some ability to tell me how well
it's
it was done
time.
Out before I'd want to take any more of that trip. Yeah.
That's reasonable. That's reasonable. I'm the guy who... I like to be the tip of the spear in those situations, so I'm happy to be the guy who tells you whether or not to watch it after, like, 5 or 6 episodes.
Whereas Budding Prospects seem to, you know... That's a low. It seemed like a low stakes investment. You know what I mean?
Very low stakes. 30 minutes. That one, for people who have any interest, is about some dudes in the 80s in the Mission District of San Francisco who are sort of down on their luck somewhat and agree to live out on a farm in Mendocino and sort of keep an eye on someone's pot farm.
Indeed.
It's funny, and it has actors that I know to be funny from other things. All of these things, I don't know if you found this too. I found like all of the Amazon pilots were sort of a who's who of that guys.
A lot of that guys. Although, you know, for me, at least with budding prospects, I was very excited to see Brett Gelman. And he is the guy that has the farm.
I love him. He's hilarious. I like the tall, skinny guy from Avatar.
Yeah. And I'm all in on Brett Gelman playing a smarmy asshole. And in fact, I had decided, like, if there was a show called Smarmy Asshole where Brett Gelman just played like a different smarmy asshole every week,
I would watch that show.
I would be all in on that because that's generally what he does, and he's always great at it. Yeah, like so, and he's got a whole range kind of smarmy assholes that he can do.
Right, he's not a one note smarmy asshole.
Yeah, no, he can go lots of places with it. So it's he almost reminds me of like T.J. Miller in that way of like
he's got a particular type, but he can do it in different situations.
Yeah, it takes it to lots of different places, and you realize there's a lot more depth there than maybe initially appeared.
Right. T.J. Miller, not just a guy screaming, yeah.
Right. So, I'm definitely ready for Silicon Valley to return, by the way.
Oh, man. He's wonderful.
No, that'll be pretty soon.
What have I been watching that he's in?
Crashing.
Yeah, he was great in Crashing. Yeah, which as T.J. Miller
continues to be excellent. By the way, this—and I know we're now off topic—and we weren't necessarily going to talk about Crashing.
God forbid
that we weren't necessarily going to talk about Crashing this week. But the scene in Crashing where he gets the gig and they make him do the celebration over and over again, and then they all start doing their own I got the gig celebrations is just so
oh my God
joyful and hilarious, and it made me so happy to watch How these people just jump on the couch like idiots. I loved it.
I thought it was such a brilliant scene on so many levels. And how about just like, who's more awesome than Sarah Silverman? I dare you to name anyone in the world.
Yeah, I mean, she's right there. Right there.
No, she's literally as awesome. Just like human being awesome.
Did you watch that and think at all, like, where did it go wrong, Jimmy Kimmel? Like, why couldn't you make that one work? Because I did. That happened to me.
Apparently he's happy with his wife and child or whatever. Yeah, but no, I think sure. that all... the time.
Yeah, it's weird.
Like, who? And you know what I think right after that?
What?
I think she's only like 8 or 9 years older than me.
You're thinking you still got a shot.
I'm just saying.
All right. If I can bring it back to the original topic at hand,
I can't promise you'll have my full attention, but sure.
Did you find that there was some similarity between Crashing and The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel in terms of the craft of comedy sort of angle to the show that seemed to be on display?
Well, that's an interesting question. I do think they're treading some similar territory there. I think whether we are going to watch her as we are watching Pete Holmes struggle into a nascent comedy career is up for grabs.
I believe that's part of it, because from what I understand, at least of what I've heard about the show, is that this is somewhat based on the life of Joan Rivers.
Wow, was Joan Rivers that old?
Well, I don't. You know, I mean, I don't, they may have changed the time period. At least that's what I've heard. So,
huh? Born 1933. So yeah, I suppose she could have been.
I'm going
pretty
to
much
see if I can
pretty much that old. She's probably what, 27 or something in the show?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like that could be right.
That's 1960 for Joan Rivers, so she easily could have been bumping into Lenny Bruce and... Huh. Well, that casts it in a whole new and even more delightful light, to be totally honest with you.
So, so there you go.
By the way, the guy who's playing Lenny Bruce might be Lenny Bruce resurrected somehow from the dead.
He thought he nailed it, huh?
No, I mean, just looking at him. Like, have you seen pictures of Lenny Bruce? Google Lenny Bruce right now.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen pictures of Lenny Bruce. He looked like Lenny Bruce.
He looks uncannily like Lenny Bruce, I would say.
I hadn't thought about that, but I certainly would not dispute it. certainly would not dispute it. All right. So, in your mind, you saw all five. Are they all five worth watching for someone who hasn't seen them yet? Or where's the cutoff for you?
I would say they're all yes. Did you think these three were all worth watching?
I did. Like I said, I probably only the first two were I would be super interested in it as a series.
Okay.
But in terms of, yeah, you watch all three episodes.
And part of that is because Oasis, like, isn't really your thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's also a little bit of that.
So, okay. So I would say I feel that way about the cartoon, the new VIPs. It probably is worth watching. I'm not going to like run out and insist on watching the rest of them if and when they come out, but it's a funny premise and it's funny. That's just not totally my thing, but I think definitely worth watching. And then The Legend of Master Legend is so bizarre, and I could see how some people would really love it. I just don't know that I did, but I'm interested to hear your perspective. I feel like I could almost be talked into thinking I liked it more than I feel like I do right now.
Okay. Well, we shall see, I suppose.
Well, I mean, hopefully you'll watch the damn thing so we can talk about it for real next week.
I probably had that coming. All right. So should we switch gears and jump into the world of sports?
Before we do that, one last sort of homeworky thing from last week. You did listen to the Drake album.
I did listen to the Drake album. I don't know how many more times I will listen to the Drake album. I think I may be done with the Drake album, but I did listen to it, yeah.
You got anything to say at all?
I totally listened to it. No, I think a lot of the things that I felt, coming into it, that it's overly long, he's, you know, kind of spilling out a lot of stuff on the page, it does 10,000 different things, I'm not sure it does all of them well, look, at this point, either you're in on the full Drake experience, or you're not, and I am, like, pretty definitively not. So, this album didn't do a lot to change that for me. That said, there are a couple moments, like every Drake album, there's a couple moments where you're like, yeah, it's pretty good.
You didn't think it held together a little better as a complete album, even though I agree it's too long, and it doesn't, I'm not saying it's all great, but I thought as an album, it held together much better than, like, Views.
I think it barely holds together at all, to be honest. Like, if you're talking about it as a long-form content statement, no. No, I don't think that. You know, I think it's
a No. I don't mean like as a concept album. I just mean like it feels like a good album.
Yeah, not for me. I just don't like the dude.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, it's not for me. And I don't. You know, I don't. He doesn't need to change my mind. You know what I mean? Like he's doing okay without me.
No, he'd probably like say something in a rap about how he doesn't need to change you or the other haters' minds.
That's correct. That's correct. I'm, you know, there aren't many times in life that I'll just cop to being a hater, but I think I'm a Drake hater.
Yeah. I think you just might be.
Yeah. Give any, like, has your reflection of it changed in the last 7 days?
Not especially. I mean, I I'm not a Drake lover, but this album, I do think, like, it's not like I'm rushing to listen to it every day, but I do think on a listen, it's better than most of his others.
Yeah, see, maybe
I think
not
just
Drake
as
hater,
a rapper,
a
I think he
fighter.
Put together a pretty decent rap album.
Yeah. I mean, there's some UK grime on it. That was unexpected.
Yeah,
good move. Drake didn't see that coming.
So you really don't? Do you not like UK grime in general, no, or did you like just UK find grime. His attempt find, at it particularly distasteful?
I just find it like cloying. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think if you're like determined to interpret everything he does as like an obnoxious act, then it's going to be hard to enjoy anything.
Yeah. I'm not determined. I would like to be wrong on this. Drake is on my team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I think maybe you like.
I think sometimes people are just like weird nerds. Like I think sometimes just he's like a kind of a weird nerd.
I mean,
and I think it comes off as insincere, but I don't feel like he is.
The record's undeniably corny, though, right?
Yeah, I think that's what I mean. He's corny.
Yeah, well, but I really enjoy that.
But yeah, that's fair. But I just don't think it's like disingenuous. Corny.
Is that
any consolation?
No, that's fair. And I'm not necessarily accusing him of being disingenuous. It's just obnoxious. Yeah, it's more like obnoxious than disingenuous. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's not my
No, that's
he's
fair.
Not,
I mean, he's definitely dude. Got some... He's just sort of a corny dude. Yeah. That's just kind of who he is.
That's what he is. To me, he is the guy mysteriously in the University of Kentucky layup line at March Madness, airballing jumpers by 2 feet. That's my Drake, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. He does these things.
Yep. I don't know. And that's where I am on him, and that's where I'll stay.
Yeah, that seems to be the case.
You know, it doesn't mean I can't enjoy Jumpman.
Right. Yeah. Sure. No, I mean, who doesn't?
But yeah, that's as far as it goes for me. Okay. Can I tell you something I am excited about?
Is it the actual NCAA tournament that you just casually referenced?
No, actually, it's Christian Pulisic.
Oh, yeah. Best player in American soccer history.
America has a star, and this one, like, might actually be legit in a...
Like, on a world level.
In a not Freddie Adu kind of way. Actually...
No. Because that's not fair to... I mean, look, I'm no Landon Donovan defender, but that's not fair to Landon Donovan or Clint Dempsey. Like... Those two guys have been American stars and are competent world players. Freddie Adu was BS.
Yeah, you're right. I wasn't trying to make the case that there's never been like that we've never had a best player. But,
right.
But we have never had a best player who has accomplished some of the things that Christian Pulisic has. And
it's not even – I think you know as well as I do or as well as just about anyone, that's not what's exciting.
Well, the exciting part is the kicker to all of that is he's 18. Like right
well,
now.
Well, no, but I mean just in terms
18.
Of – yes, he's it's all that, right? And it is – yeah, he's got accomplishments for an 18-year-old that stand out from an American soccer perspective. But – what's exciting to me is, as you can probably hear the siren, that's not for me. Don't worry. It's just a fire truck driving past my house. He is, you can tell, when you've watched enough soccer, there are guys who are really good, and then there are actual soccer stars that are special with the ball. And Christian Pulisic is special with the ball in a way that no American has ever been before, and in a way that allows him to compete at and compete with the best teams and players in the world.
Yeah. So, you know, and part of what I was referring to in terms of like, you know, no American has ever scored on Real Madrid in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Till Christian Pulisic. And this guy, I mean, that's the highest level of soccer attainable. Right? You're
right.
Going up against...
Just to be playing in that game is an accomplishment for right. an American.
Yeah. No, I don't think any Americans played against Real Madrid in any competition outside of a, you know, exhibition-friendly one. They come over for those, like, USA tours or whatever.
Right.
But, like, you know, for a guy to do that in the most important competition at the highest level of the game... That's something. But you know, when you don't necessarily know how that's going to translate to the pitch, if he's going to be able to play with these other guys. So the U.S. had two World Cup qualifiers over the last couple of days. And the stuff that you're talking about, seeing him on the ball, like having a guy who can take guys on, make something out of nothing. There was a play that, and the referee, unfortunately, blew the call that was literally at his feet and called him out of bounds. But he took a ball on the sideline and just took two deft touches and blew past three guys and started a breakaway. And we've never had a guy who could do that. And then on top of that, when he's not just a guy who's like, all right, well, I can take guys on 1v1 and I'm fast. He looks to pass. And, you know, they beat Honduras.
Had an incredible assist in the Panama game.
6-0 the other night. He set up the first goal. It was a deflection off one of his shots. He had an assist, a beautiful chip to Clint Dempsey on the third goal. He scored the fourth goal. He assisted on another beautiful pass from midfield and caught Dempsey again on a through ball on the fifth goal. And then he drew the foul that led to the free kick on the sixth goal. So like, this is a kid who's 18. We've just not had a player do this kind of thing before, and it seems so repeatable. And then, of course, he found Dempsey again on a play that he completely created by juking two guys out of their
in
jobs,
the box.
In the box.
Yep.
And then, you know, and look, they're not playing great competition right now.
But and they're not playing great soccer either, unfortunately, as a team. But
he is the offense at this moment. It's him and Dempsey.
Well, and you know, again, I'm telling you things you already know, but the having someone like Pulisic out there, what he does to the value and capabilities of Clint Dempsey is infinite.
Yeah.
I mean, Clint Dempsey has been trying for his blessed little heart for his entire U.S. soccer career to create offense on his own. Because Michael Bradley can't do it for him, for God's sakes. And what he's done, given that he's really not that type of player, he's to be commended for what he's done in his career, scoring-wise, for U.S. soccer. But to have someone who can truly create and find him should stretch his career considerably and help him a lot.
Yeah, presuming his health holds up, he's got a heart condition. Right. He's Clint's an assassin. And, we're quickly finding out that if you can put the ball in a position where he's going to have an opportunity, there's a good chance he can take advantage of that opportunity. So
he's a finisher.
Yeah.
You know, and who knows? I mean, I'm not really saying this, but who knows? Like, think about the great finishers like a Luis Suarez, right? Like, that's a guy who has incredible midfielders on every team he plays on and has been getting tremendous service forward for his entire soccer career. Who knows if Clint Dempsey could have been something like that had he had, you know, elite world midfielders playing him the ball more often.
Right. And that's the kind of thing that, like, I mean, soccer, it's just hard for one dude on a soccer pitch.
Yeah. There's so much space, just that alone.
Yeah. You know, and you see that when, you know, if you just tune into some random messy game and expect to see, like, oh, this guy's the best player in the world, of course he's going to dominate. Like, it doesn't always work like that.
Right.
And so
you can see it.
Yeah.
But he's not necessarily going to score twice.
To have a player playing with great teammates and in great games, it's invaluable. And you can see just the leap that this kid's game has taken forward in a year. And it makes you really excited about what could potentially be ahead for him. We need a nickname for this kid. And that's going to be the thing. Because a lot of people don't know about him yet. I feel like a catchy nickname would be super helpful.
Yeah, like something to put on the Sports Illustrated cover when he gets it, when he's on it.
Right now, I'm on like Bundesliga Jesus, but I think that's a little weird. There's some room there.
I don't know how I feel about that.
All right,
Christian Pulisic.
The Outlaws have been calling him Pulisic, like with a CK, but I don't like that. I'm not.
But I think it's pronounced Pulisic, though, isn't it?
Some people, I don't know. I've heard it a lot of different ways.
I've heard it both ways. Yeah, so, no, me too. No one seems to know yet. We will.
That's what I mean. Like, they got a bit of a PR problem here. So, hey.
Oh, you don't say? U.S. soccer has a bit of a PR problem, huh?
I know. What, like, for the love of God, and this is no offense to the fine people of BN Sport, but, like, we have to get these qualifiers in these national team games on either on ESPN or Fox or NBC.
Something.
Like, I can't have to be running out to a bar at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday night to watch a freaking soccer game. Like,
yeah, that's dumb.
And it's dumb. It's dumb.
Like someone fucking step up for the country here.
Yeah, this is was America we're talking about, for God's sakes. all right. So speaking of America, the another great American sporting event is in full swing. We are at the Final Four. Have you enjoyed this tournament to this point?
I have. And, you know, it's the year I probably know the least about college basketball I've ever have in my adult life. And for that matter, even if I knew my usual amount, I wouldn't know much about half of the Final Four. It's been fun because the games have been good.
The games have been good. There have been a pretty low amount of buzzer beaters and things like that. But
right.
The games themselves have been excellent,
Yeah. Competitive throughout, these lots of lead changes sorts of games that one team will go up big and you'll get a big comeback and then it'll be close down the stretch. I mean, just a lot of that throughout the tournament, whether it's Gonzaga and Northwestern or Kansas and Oregon or that Kentucky game, which was wild. That's what this tournament's been, which is cool. It's fun.
Yeah, and there's still, even now, there's still a healthy amount of NBA caliber talent.
Yes.
In
yep, this guys will play at the next level.
Yeah. Like, when you watch a team like Oregon, you go, whoa, these dudes have yep. some athletes, and athletes that you
Bell,
see.
The big man who had all those blocks in the Kansas, I mean, he was unbelievable to watch.
Yeah. I have to believe that there's a spot on an NBA roster for a guy who can do that, even if it's just,
Oh, he could play for the Cavs tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Cavs just signed Larry Sanders to do exactly what that Bell kid is doing.
Yep. And I would guess they'd prefer Bell.
I bet you they would. Well, I don't know. We should check if he has any marijuana arrests, but.
Hey, he plays in Oregon. There's a pretty decent chance.
That's a good point.
But you look at Gonzaga. Probably not arrests since he's in Oregon. But
Yeah. I should have said positive tests, but presumably he doesn't have those, yeah. or he would not be playing.
I mean, you look at Gonzaga, and that kid Collins is coming off the bench What is he? 6'11", 7 foot. With some who can move.
Got like, skills. Yeah.
Like that guy's going to play at the next level, I think. And,
Oski will probably be like a, second rounder or something like that. Yeah. Maybe, he's a guy who can give you 10 minutes of banging and post scoring. He's pretty slick around the basket. I think you've got point guards on most of these teams. I haven't actually seen much of South Carolina, unfortunately, just because of my schedule. But,
the Frank Martin experience is interesting, and I've never been a guy who really liked him, and he's completely won me over this tournament.
The South Carolina Frank Martin, although still a raving lunatic, is considerably less insane.
He's like a charming raving lunatic.
Exactly. He was like a little much at Kansas State, yeah. certainly.
And somebody brought this up. Like, he coached Michael Beasley.
How crazy is that?
How did that ever happen? How did he recruit Michael Beasley, who is like literally the most chilled, zonked out dude in maybe the history of basketball?
We can say it. It's public record. High. The highest dude. Yeah. He's super duper high.
Recruited by the most intense guy you have ever seen. A man who says that he had to ask his wife out 7 times before she said yes.
Which is like... Also,
super stalker.
Yeah, not great.
Yeah,
but I guess it worked out in that particular case. But
I mean, once you get to time five, you're just like, I'm not taking hints. Like this is not a hint situation. This is I'm ignoring your feedback and pressing forward.
Right. Yeah, that's not a subtle. Right. No is not that subtle.
Yeah, time four or time five, you're basically just saying, hey, I'm just trying to find the number. There's a number where you're going to give up, and I'm going to find it. You know what I mean?
Like, I will break down this wall.
Oh, man. But yet, he's been enjoyable to watch. And that team, not always enjoyable to watch, but they do play defense.
They play D, yeah. No, I'm excited to watch the games this weekend.
I think Carolina-Oregon is going to be a lot of fun.
Again, Oregon to me, they again, I don't know much, but watching them, it seems like they got 3-4 guys that could play at the next level. And they're fun to watch because they got guards that attack and then Bell in the middle just like finishing around the rim and blocking shots. It's a well-constructed college basketball team.
Yeah, and, you know, Carolina sort of – they've almost lucked into this thing where
– says the Carolina fan. Are we in a reverse jinx situation right now?
No. I'm really just talking about the state of Carolina basketball generally.
Okay.
Where they've sort of lucked into this thing where they get these like – fringe NBA caliber guys who stay for 3 and 4 years and they wind up with this like really deep experienced team. And it's all totally by accident. Like Roy Williams will tell you, like, you know, I'm recruiting the same guys that Kentucky and Duke are. I'm just not getting any of them. So, you know, we wind up with these guys and they're all bought into, you know, the one thing they do that a lot of these other teams don't, like if you're, you know, if you're getting recruited by Kentucky, you're getting recruited by John Calipari, and he's going to talk about what Kentucky can do for you.
At the pro level. Yep.
If you're getting recruited by Carolina, they're talking about Carolina and what you can be a part of. You know what I mean? Right. And it's a bit of a different deal. And so I do think they get guys who maybe want to stay around a little bit longer and value that experience or want to be a part of something bigger.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so maybe that's the way they wound up. But, you know, they have a team that is, for college, is huge. They play a lot more guys than many teams do. And they have a lot of guys who can hurt you.
Yep. So it should be a good Final Four.
I agree. And if, you know, if it winds up Carolina-Gonzaga, which is sort of the way I think it will go, that's a fun final. If South Carolina wins game, this could be ratings poison. Gonzaga's ratings trouble enough. In fact, the Gonzaga-Xavier game was like the lowest rated Elite Eight game in like 20 years.
But might that not just be like 111 as much as it was Gonzaga?
I think it's 111 in teams, you know, just that are not... Not that Gonzaga is not a national name, but they don't have a national viewership. You know what I mean?
I guess. I don't know. I'll be interested to see how the ratings turn out for this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if Carolina loses in that semifinal, that's another way that it's trouble. You know, because no one knows Oregon, you know?
Yeah. I just don't – does it matter as much for college basketball?
I think it does. If you look at the ratings for Kentucky-UCLA or Kentucky-Carolina, when you get those blue bloods, you know, people watch that.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the Elite Eight. When you get to the finals and the – when you get to the Final Four, you don't think it's a little more universal? I mean, I'm not saying it's quite the Super Bowl, but, like, the event is the interest to some degree, right?
To some degree, but I think if you go back and look at, say, like, the Butler Final Fours, or I know for a fact, like, people – when George Mason made the Final Four that year in that crazy run, like, well, people didn't really watch that game when they played.
So, really?
Yeah.
That's
you
a
know,
bummer.
Not that people didn't watch at all, but obviously it just didn't, you know, it didn't do a big number. And that's, you know, you kind of need that casual guy who's excited about, you know, the uniforms a little bit, I think, when the tournament comes through. So, who did you pick to win from the beginning?
UCLA.
All right. So we're out. You got any? I completely missed the Final Four.
Who were the 2 and 3 in Carolina's bracket?
That was UCLA and Kentucky.
Yeah, I think I may have totally missed the Final Four as well. Oh, no, I think I had Gonzaga. I can't remember.
Yeah, hey, that's defensible. I think my West Virginia pick in that bracket was defensible, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they could easily won that Gonzaga game. So,
That game was awful to watch. That was probably the exception to a otherwise very entertaining tournament.
Even that game was, though, was very competitive.
It was just competitive, but it was not a good basketball game.
You know, West Virginia's going to play ugly. That's pretty much that's how they
but
roll.
But that was not even really West Virginia ugly. It was like West Virginia mucks things up with heavy pressure and, like, turning you over. That was not, like, a huge turnover game as much as it was just ugly missed shots and, like, kicking the ball around, you know?
Yeah, there was a lot of those. I know this is not NCAA related at all, but are you maybe worried about is the wrong word, but, like, what's your level of concern for the Cleveland Cavaliers right now?
Level of concern is technically zero because I could care less. But if you're talking about should they be worried, I think very much so. They have a lot of old guys who can't play defense.
Yeah. I mean, the defense seems to be a problem. And I don't think just a switch they can flip in the playoffs.
It's not a switch they can flip. It'll be a little better because you'll probably see less of the old guys who can't defend from the end of the bench. And, you know, LeBron will take it up a notch. And I think it's possible that you'll see a somehow more convincing defensive effort from guys like Kevin Love, who you did see that from in last year's playoffs, and even Kyrie Irving, who, you know, anything's possible.
Anything is possible!
Thank you. But generally speaking, they are not – they don't have defensive depth at all. And I think that could be a real problem. I'm not so much worried. I don't think it matters so much if they have home court advantage. I think it just matters if they can't –
that's an if. It's currently an if. Season ended today, right. They would not.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't think that matters as much as can they figure out a way to just defend at a higher level as a team, because when they get into playoff series with Boston and or Washington, I think those teams are good enough and do defend enough that they'll be in close games. And in close playoff games, you got to play some defense.
What would you say the percentage chance is that someone other than Cleveland is the Eastern Conference champion?
Like from a regular season or in the playoffs?
I mean, in that someone other than Cleveland wins the Eastern Conference and represents them in the finals.
I would say it's gone up from like 3% to maybe 15 or 20.
Oh, wow. Okay. I was thinking it's higher than that.
It's higher than 20% that they lose the conference title?
Yeah, I think if you're talking about the combined odds of Washington or Boston winning the Eastern Conference, I think they're higher than 15%. I think they're higher than 30%.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. All right. So you think there's about a 1 in 3 chance Cleveland does not represent the East?
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. Particularly,
I think
that
sounds a little high to me, but not crazy.
Court, you know what I mean? Although, I'm not sure about you, but which Brad Stevens playoff series victory is your favorite?
Yeah, no, I get it.
So, you know, there's some showing that needs to be done, I would say, for both of those teams, but yeah. You know, like I said, they seem to have the goods, and they seem to play Cleveland pretty tough as it is. So we'll see.
I don't think at this point in his career, the "show me your playoff series victories" argument is particularly compelling as a knock on Brad Stevens, for what it's worth.
Really?
No.
I don't know. To me, if you're presenting,
what playoff series should he have won?
If you're presenting him to me as one of the top five coaches in the game, which many people
I think he is,
do, then yeah, how about one? How about one? Show me one.
Why? What? His roster has.
They've been in the playoffs. He's had a roster good enough to make the playoffs. No. Were they an 8 seed every time?
Boston, the Chicago Bulls could make the playoffs this year.
Were they an 8 seed every time they've been in the playoffs?
I think they've only been last year under Brad Stevens, right?
Well, I'll be looking this up. Hold on.
And they certainly weren't a home team.
Just saying, we're pretty quick to anoint this dude.
He's been in the NBA for a few years, and he...
They
maximized the value of his talent consistently.
They were 7 seed in 2015, and a fifth seed in 2016 against against a not juggernaut Atlanta Hawk club.
So they've been twice, and it's reasonable to say they could have potentially won a series last year, but it's not like, oh, this guy can't win in the playoffs. I mean, he's barely been there, and like his roster has been overperforming.
Hey, I'm never a guy to say just because someone hasn't won doesn't mean they can't win. All I'm saying is hasn't won a series. Not hasn't gotten to the conference finals. Hasn't won a series.
So let me ask you this.
That's all I'm saying.
Let me ask you this.
Supposed genius.
Do you want, if I give you an option for a coach, you want Alvin Gentry or Brad Stevens?
I'll take Brad Stevens.
Okay. Alvin Gentry has won playoff series. Do you want... who else? I'm trying to think of guys who have won playoff series. Like it's just not.
You can find examples of terrible guys who won playoff series.
Well, I don't think Alvin Gentry's terrible.
I'm just saying, like,
Brad Stevens is considered one of the top five coaches in the NBA
Mike Budenholzer isn't, for example. But I think I might rather have Budenholzer at this point.
Oh, I think Budenholzer is considered near, if not in the top five. Well, yeah, it gets crowded up there. There's a lot of good coaches right now.
So, you know, I'd certainly...
Scott Brooks. Would you rather have Scott Brooks? Of course not. You'd obviously rather have Brad Stevens than Scott Brooks.
You know what? Like, I think it's time to reconsider Scott Brooks.
I'm not saying he's bad, but he certainly... Like, Brad Stevens has done more with... Has done a better job of consistently maximizing his talent value.
If the Wizards and the Celtics play in the playoffs this year, are you like, oh, you know, definitive coaching advantage for the Wizards? I don't know that I feel, or for the Celtics, I mean. I don't know that I feel that
yes,
way.
Yes, I do think that, yes.
Yeah, I don't know that I feel that way. And their regular season series has been pretty damn competitive, I gotta say. Not that defines everything.
It has. You're right.
So, I'm just saying, like, maybe we've anointed this guy quickly is my only point.
I don't think so. But okay, we'll tell you what. If he doesn't win a playoff series this year, come back to me and tell me I'm a big jackass.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Particularly if he's the one seed, then I will most certainly be doing that.
Well, yeah, if he's the one seed, they're definitely going to win. But, you know... Two or three is not as easy.
No, indeed. All right, that'll wrap it up. I think, right? Should we assign some homework?
Well, how about you just watch a little bit of Jane the Virgin, like you were supposed to?
All right. Well, how about you watch
the other two?
How about
Amazon?
You watch Mistaken for Strangers, like you were supposed to?
That's what I was going to say.
All right.
I was going to say, you watch what you were supposed to and the Amazon pilots, and I'll watch the movie about the National, Mistaken for Strangers.
You realize somewhere someone is listening to this podcast and actually does the homework and is mad at both of us all the time.
I know. I feel terrible for that person. But I have to be honest with you. I feel worse for that person after the weeks where we not only fail to do but also forget to discuss the homework.
Indeed. Sorry.
Like, at least this time we're like, we hear you. We're getting to it. Stay with us. And at least there's no new homework this week for that person.
Right. And also, in fairness to me, I was really sick, as you can still sort of tell.
Yeah.
For a few days.
Excuses.
And so I did. Yeah, on one hand, it did give me some time to watch things. But on the other hand,
really with it.
Yeah. A lot of it appeared to me in a fever dream.
Well, that might have worked in the favor of some things. Like,
not for Drake, unfortunately.
Yeah, no. That may have actually, like, helped with Oasis, which doesn't say great things about Oasis, I guess.
Yeah, probably. Speaking of which, have you heard that new Gorillaz song? This is not homework.
Yes, I've heard all four new Gorillaz songs.
Yeah, but then Noel Gallagher done the background vocals.
Sound great. Yeah. I'm excited for the album, and we'll have to talk about it, obviously, when it is released.
Yeah, it should be good. All right.
While we're on the subject of albums we didn't intend to talk about, there's been a lot of anniversary hullabaloo about OK Computer.
Yeah.
And my gosh, isn't that album just wonderful? Is all I really need to say right now about it.
I mean, it's my favorite album ever. So
yeah,
yeah. So there you go. That's
interesting.
That's my favorite album ever.
It is in a constant three-way battle with the Bends and In Rainbows for my favorite Radiohead album. Although, you know, Kid A's great too. There's so many great things. But the Bends and OK Computer are my original favorite Radiohead albums. Yeah. And then
I've actually, I said favorite album ever. I would put In Rainbows ahead of it. But just in terms of, you know, when I say favorite, I'm kind of incorporating the sentimental
how it hit you in life and all that. Yeah.
Where I was fortunate enough to get that record several weeks in advance.
Okay, Computer.
Yeah, and they, you know, because I was in radio, I was just starting radio then. And yeah. They did this thing, and I guess Critic got the same way. They thought it was really cute that they would send out Walkman with the record, like, glued in it.
Like so, a tape, like a cassette tape?
Yeah, had a cassette tape in the Walkman. And it was like, get it radio. Here's a radio for you, for Radiohead. You know, great. So I had this, like, Walkman that all it would do was play OK Computer, which was fine with me because that's really all I wanted to listen to for, for this really, really long stretch. But eventually I realized, like, I would like to listen to this other than on this machinery. So I had to figure out how to, like, dislodge this glued together Walkman. So
did
that
you?
I could get the tape out. And eventually I did, yes.
Congratulations.
So that I could listen to it other places until there was a compact disc available for me. And yeah, I mean, it's a perfect album. So it's so amazing, start to finish. So
it is.
So yeah, make it that your that. Homework if you have not spent time or you're too young to or whatever to have really lived in love through OK Computer.
If something's wrong with you and you have never gotten into OK Computer, it's never too late.
Yeah,
is what Derek's trying to say.
Still sounds fresh 20 years later.
It's just phenomenal.
So
it's phenomenal, and it was really the end of that version of Radiohead, and it's like the most incredible sort of swan song of an era that you will ever hear.
Yeah, agreed. All right, let's call it a day.
All right, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed, the light's out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.